We bring in our good friend from the Indianapolis Star to talk a little Hoosiers here on a Thursday morning. Zach Osterman joins us. Zach, good morning. How are you?
Pretty good, Glass. How about you?
Good. Thanks for joining us, pal. We appreciate it. And we know you're getting your the duffel bag packed. You've got the pine tar, the batting helmet, both your gloves in there. You're heading down to Nashville for the big regional coming up tomorrow.
Yep. It's Indiana at 3 o'clock against Radford.
ESPN3, so the first game will be streamed, and then if the Hoosiers stay in the winner's bracket after they beat Radford, the SEC Network will pick that up, so we'll keep you in tune with all of that. But it's a neat story about the Hoosiers, Zach, because a month ago, well, probably a little bit longer than that, probably beginning of April, this team wasn't looking to be on the NCAA radar. What turned it around for the Hoosiers?
Well, I mean, I think this team has always leaned on its pitching staff. I think in the last 14 games, that staff only allowed more than 5 runs in the game once. And at the same time, I think the timely hitting has finally kind of dovetailed with that, whether it's from Scott Donnelly or Logan Sowers or, a slew of different guys. But, this team really, starting with a sweep at Maryland in early May, this team won 11 of its last 14 games, and that's the kind of record that'll get you into the NCAA tournament.
How important do you think it was when Fred Glass replaced Tracy Smith with someone who has been there, done that, with the College World Series, as Chris Lemonis was with Louisville the last 2 years? How easy, or was it easier, to make that transition? And now that they're in the NCAA, the team and coach are kind of speaking the same language. That has to help, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think that's probably one. I mean, I don't think that's the only reason why Indiana targeted Lemonis, but he knew, or you knew, when Tracy left, that Indiana was still probably going to return a pretty experienced team, particularly on the pitching side. So bringing in somebody that, as I guess to use your words, could speak the same language in terms of not just what to do in the postseason, but how to get there, how to build a postseason resume, how to win the kind of games you need to win to get into the NCAA tournament, whether it's via the Big Ten's automatic bid or this year the program's first ever at-large bid. I think that was a very important part, particularly as things started to come together down the stretch of everybody maybe just sort of hitting the same groove, because they've all kind of seen this before. They've all done this.
And the interesting part as well is you've seen changes to the lineup. You've seen changes to the rotation. Heck, some of our guys that were pitching early weekend games starting earlier in the season are now in the bullpen and vice versa, so they weren't afraid to make changes, and that kind of sparked them moving forward.
Well, and I think that also speaks again to especially the pitching depth. I mean, when you talk about the versatility of somebody like Scott Efros, who has now basically done everything. I think Efros told us at one point this year, he said, "I think I've pitched in every inning in my Indiana career.
1 through 9.
Yeah, and when you have that versatility to be able to move Luke Harrison from the bullpen to the starting rotation, or to be able to move Scott Efros from the starting rotation to the bullpen, or, if you have to go, I think there was one game maybe in the Ohio State series where they went 3 innings with Ryan Halstead, so Efros comes back and closes. You know, just to have that ability to sort of chop and change, because, and I think this is a testament in part to what Indiana saw in the College World Series 2 years ago. Just how important a good pitching staff and a good matchup bullpen are. I think that is really what this team's got to lean on in the postseason, but I think that it can lean on that. There's just so much versatility in that pitching staff, so many guys that can give you 4 innings if you need to right out of the gate, or can just come in and get 2 guys out with 2 guys on in the 7th.
Our guest this morning is Zach Osterman. He checks in. He's the beat writer for the Indiana Hoosiers for the Indianapolis Star, and we're always happy to talk with him and get caught up. And you talk about the pitching matchups. Indiana sends out left-hander Kyle Hart. Folks will say, geez, Kyle's been here forever. And then you peel it back and remember, well, this is going to be the first time for him pitching in the postseason. Let's take it back to a few years ago. Kyle Hart clinched the regular season title for the Hoosiers at Ohio State back in 2013, but didn't pitch in that postseason. Then he had some arm problems. Talk about coming full circle, Zach. We'll see it all tomorrow night.
Yeah, and he's, I think, a good guy to do it. He didn't pitch in the 2013 postseason. Tracy Smith kind of kept saving him for the Monday
and they kept winning. They never needed it.
Game, and yeah, they never needed him. And then obviously, I mean, if you look at Aaron Slager's performance in the College World Series, there was obviously no reason to go to him in Game 3 there. But, you know, I mean, I talked to him about it. He said, you know, I'm going to be a little bit amped up personally. But at the same time, this is a guy who, if you've watched him over the course of his career, is incredibly composed on the mound. He doesn't get easily rattled. Even when he gives up, you know, 4, 5, 6 runs, I think he understands that that's just kind of part of pitching, that you're going to have bad innings, you're going to have bad outings, but if you keep kind of coming out and producing the same consistent approach every single inning, every single start, then you're going to have more good outings than bad ones. And I think that that's kind of what you want in that first regional. I mean, Chris Lanona said when they first got in, before he looked at matchups or anything else, he said, you know, I don't know exactly who we're going with in Game 1 on Friday, but I always want to pitch my best guys first, because I think it's the most important thing in a regional is to get into that winner's bracket. Don't save arms for down the line and risk anything.
It's like taking timeouts with you at the end of the game. If you can't use them, and what good are they?
And I think that's really, I mean, that speaks volumes about how far Hart has come from a slim pitch count at the beginning of the season, coming back from Tommy John surgery, to more or less, I don't know if all the shackles are off, but I mean, here's a guy that threw 90-plus pitches against Long Beach State. I want to say he's thrown a couple games of 80-plus pitches now. And he's always been an efficient pitcher. He's never been a guy that needs a ton of, he's a contact pitcher.
Yeah, he doesn't walk the park either.
Yeah, creates a lot of ground ball outs. So, I mean, I think I can't tell you that he won't get out of the first inning, but
the plan is in place. We're still relying on kids to execute.
For somebody who's never started in the NCAA tournament, which is remarkable in itself, he's a good guy to have taking the ball in Game 1.
And Radford, their opponent, is only lost 14 times, I believe, on the season, 43-14. That is the opponent, 3 o'clock on Friday afternoon, Game 1, to get things started in Nashville, the Vanderbilt Regional. Indiana's experience should factor into that, even though their starting pitcher might not have it. You've had guys in this situation, at least the junior class has been there the last 3 years. The seniors have been there 3 of the last 4. That can't be a downside either for the Hoosiers.
No, and again, I think that's when you talk about what has clicked with Lemonis and this team, I think that's a big part of it, that everybody kind of understands the confidence, the approach, the sort of total package of how you behave when you want to be an NCAA tournament team. And I think that probably, and it's easy to say this when it works, but I think that's probably part of what helped you snap out of that midseason slump, is everybody just kind of understanding, look, we're good enough to do this, we're good enough to be here, let's just keep coming back, and the results will start turning for us. And obviously, sweep of Maryland, sweep of
Ohio State,
take 2 or 3 from Long Beach State. Pretty good showing in the Big Ten tournament, and here we are.
It wouldn't be a meeting of us if we didn't talk some Hoosier hoops, as you are the beat writer for Indiana basketball for the Indianapolis Star. Zach Osterman is our guest this morning. You will be driving through Kentucky. Are you going to stop and get some Maker's Mark? Would that make your day if you make it down to Vanderbilt?
I don't think so, no.
Thonmaker is on a lot of people's mind. Tell us where that stands in the wonderful world of recruiting.
Well, to be honest, it's hard to say, and his is a curious recruitment.
That's why I'm asking you about it, because it seems not to doesn't seem standardized.
A couple of national reporters said recently talked to his guardian, who said that Indiana and Arizona State are the two schools most in touch right now. It sounds like Kentucky's still kind of floating around. Kansas and Duke have been involved. I don't know exactly where they are right now, but he said that both Indiana and Arizona State are have a setup in place to take Maker as a mid-year enrollee and keep him for a year and a half. But at the same time, there's a lot of questions. You know, he's not really going to be ready to enroll until mid-year, so there are a lot of questions about whether or not he'll just sort of bypass college entirely and start getting ready for the NBA draft.
For those not in tune as in touch with this as they could be, why is he such a valued commodity?
He's about 7 feet tall.
You can't teach that.
He's got a lot of small forward type skills. He's a good shooter. Handles the ball well for his size. I think, you know, I mean, he's listed as a power forward, and I think that in college there are a lot of people that believe he'll need some work to really fill out, not just physically, but understand how to play in the post, how to establish post position, what, you know, how to execute through post moves, those kinds of things. But he's got the outside game, and for a guy that tall, to be able to be that skilled, I guess, facing the basket with the ball in your hands, that's awfully rare. So he's one of those guys whose upside is incredibly high, and it's not necessarily like he hasn't realized any of that yet. He's definitely still a sort of, I guess, floor-ready player. There's just some ways his game still needs to grow.
Why would he be a December candidate? What's the angle on that if I'm not following along?
Well, he was the 2016...
He'd be coming early?
Yes.
Quote-unquote early?
He reclassified, but he's from Australia he's from the Sudan, but via Australia. And so, you know, it's been work to kind of get everything to line up. He's reclassified to 2015, but I think he'll still need like a couple of months into the fall to finish everything up. That's my understanding. So he wouldn't be ready to, he wouldn't have everything squared away to be ready to sort of submit to the NCAA or whatever you want to say until December. Because he's reclassified from the 2016 class.
Zach Osterman is our guest. He's the beat writer for the Indiana Hoosiers at the Indy Star, IndyStar.com, at Zach Osterman. Recruiting numbers after the shakeup here of the springtime, how many scholarships does Indiana have available now? Do they need to fill them now? And, basketball season is going to be here before we know it.
Yeah, I mean, they have the two spots open, Devin Davis and Hunter Perea. They're dismissals, but they were at the limit before that happened. So they've got the two spots open. They're still pursuing Max Bielfeldt, who's a grad transfer from Michigan, and is a I think would be a very good addition. I think they could stand to have one more player, whether it's somebody like Bielfeldt or if you can find. I think in particular, especially because as much as we talk about Tom Nager, you know, it seems like he's not an option until at least December, so let's talk about what would be building into this team in the offseason. I think it would be good if you could get a grad transfer as long as that player fits. I think Bielfeldt would.
And the other thing is you don't have to hold him for 3 years.
More experience off of the bench, because that's kind of the one thing that I think Indiana really lost when it had to dismiss those two players was, you know, a rising senior. And although I certainly would not, I would have preached caution and expecting too much from Devin Davis, a rising junior. So bringing in a little bit more experience, solidify that bench, because I think the top eight right now is pretty strong. Only one freshman in that top eight, a lot of returning starters in that top eight. So can you maybe just solidify that with one more guy? And then you don't have to necessarily rely on one of your other two freshmen coming in.
Well, and you don't have to worry about you don't have to worry about keeping a spot for him for the next 3 years either.
Exactly.
It frees that up for the next cycle around the bend. Hey, we're going to let you go. We know you got to get your bags packed, dogs taken care of, everybody rocking and rolling down to Nashville. Wish Coach Lemonis and the boys good luck for all of us, and we'll be following you at Zach Osterman, IndyStar.com, and we'll talk to you here again in the summer, buddy. Thanks.
Thanks so much for having me, Glenn.
All right, Zach Osterman from the Indy Star. Always great to get caught up with him and what's going on. And, again, he'll have it covered for you from Nashville starting tomorrow afternoon at 3 p.m. ESPN3 has the streaming coverage. And if the Hoosiers get in the winner's bracket, Keith, it looks like it'll be the SEC Network on Saturday night, 8 o'clock for the game. And it should be the matchup against Vanderbilt.